All right, so Walt's actually known Billy for a little while, so we're going to let him kind of do the introduction here. Again, thank you all for coming out tonight. Really excited to have you here. Lots of conversation going on, lots of people sitting with people in the church that you may not know, and I just think that that is so cool and awesome. Great opportunity to get to know some folks. So I hope that you talked some here, but also afterwards, we've still got a little time extra afterwards, a little Q&A here with Billy, but also time just kind of mingle and kind of hopefully meet some folks that you may not know all that well. But without further ado, Walt.
All right, thank you, Russell. Hey, I want to thank, first of all, let's thank Russell. He's done so much work. I want to thank Laura. Laura did all the centerpieces today, right? She did them today. She realizes, guys, we didn't do any centerpieces, so she went to bat. She did an awesome job. Hey, this was just something that is the men's ministry. They thought, we want to do something for our wives, something special, like a dinner, seminar. And then we thought, well, who could we get as a speaker that would really do a great job talking about relationships? And I recommended Billy because, I know, we'll find out.
That's a big leap of faith.
If it doesn't take long to spend a few minutes with him before you just feel like you've known Billy forever. Billy is... he's got one of those names that's known, and I got the pleasure of knowing who Billy is initially because his partner for a number of years, how long were you and Mark partners? A couple decades?
A long time.
They both operate out of a very similar framework that radically changed my life at a time in my life that it needed to be radically changed. And I've always heard just nothing but glowing things about who Billy Grammer is. And so I had the privilege of just getting to know Billy, spending time with him, and I asked him, would you come and speak at our first annual dinner marriage seminar? And here he is.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah. First annual. So if we don't do a second annual...
it's because of me.
It's because of, yeah.
That guy you guys had last year, he killed it.
That's right.
In a bad way.
So Billy's going to... He has a great talk for us tonight. Listen, this is the first time we've done this, and I know there's a few like misses. Like, for instance, some of you are gluten sensitive, which we as guys didn't take that into consideration. I apologize. So we want some feedback along the way that if you guys feel like there's some things that could make this better, because we want to make this an annual. There's no reason we shouldn't have 200-300 people once a year coming together, bringing great dynamic experts to talk about relationships and marriage and these things. So feel free to give us feedback. We're open to it. But I hope you enjoyed the food tonight and you've enjoyed what we've done. If it's a little warm, I apologize. We've got that cranked down as good as we do, as good as we can. So that said, let me pray for you, Billy, and
thank
then
you.
Let's get started, okay?
Thank
All
you.
Right. Father, we just thank you for Billy. We thank you just that you have raised him up, Lord, and given him a set of skills and a heart and compassion, Lord, to touch the lives of people, both hurting and people that just want to tune up their relationships. So, Father, we just pray for him tonight that you would be with him, speak clearly through him. And, Lord, I pray for anybody here tonight, Lord, that might have had a difficult day today. I'm sure that many of us here might have had that. Just pray, Lord, that tonight would be a blessing in their marriage. We love you in Christ's name. Amen.
Thank you. Thank you, Walter. Thanks, everybody. It's so great to be here. What a wonderful vibe in this room. Way to go, Benchmark Bible. How fun is this? Now, I'm celebrating two anniversaries as we get started tonight. First and foremost, September 1st, our 40th wedding anniversary for 40 years. Woohoo! And 40 more, right, honey? Exactly. And second anniversary is today is August 3rd. August 10th, 1987, I began my practice in counseling, doing therapy, helping individuals, married couples. So I celebrate 37 years, complete 37 years of therapy, helping people, and I've averaged it out. That averages between probably 55,000 one-on-one appointments in my career thus far. I still work 3 days a week, and I enjoy that. See about 9 people Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Just helping people grow. That is awesome, isn't it? Because somebody helped me grow at a critical time in my life. So I like to help people grow. So the topic, I hope you find it interesting, keeping attraction and desire alive. And I like this part, a paradoxical approach. So I'm going to begin by asking and giving you four items in a list, and you got to tell me which one doesn't belong. Ready? Shrimp, bass, lobster, Chinese man run over by a truck. Which one does not belong? No. Bass. Yes. Do you know why? Because all the others are crustaceans. Ah. Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. No. It's a good joke because the nature of paradox is when we get surprised by the unexpected, right? And that is really the nature of our faith and our spiritual journey. Think about it just for a moment. In life, you remember the movie The Sixth Sense? We get that line, "I see dead people." And you're watching the whole movie, and what do you discover at the end? Bruce Willis is dead. Who knew? But there's always an unexpected with the idea of paradox. And usually, when it's unexpected, we have some delight. We have some amazement. So you think back on our spiritual journey, and we have God saying in Isaiah, "My ways are not your ways. My thoughts are not your thoughts." You know that phrase? And so we find it's a paradox. Define your life, you lose it. The way up is down. The way out is in. Paul says, "I beg God to take this thorn from me, because I knew that if he would finally heal this and alleviate this, I would soar and I would do great things." And what did God say? "I'm going to leave it in, and you're going to find that my grace is sufficient in it, not apart from it." What? Who says that? And then Jacob gets his hip dislocated, and he walks with a limp the rest of his life. What kind of freedom is that? And then we have a suffering Messiah. What a paradox. These things shouldn't go together, but they do. When Jesus begins his ministry in Mark chapter 2, if you remember the story, there is a crowded house and a man is lame and they lower him through the roof. Now, get this. It's crowded. He's lowered. He can't walk. And Mark says he walks out the front door, walking. And all the people were astonished, amazed. That word in Greek is paradoxed. They were paradoxed. Wait, what just happened? This guy went down. He couldn't walk. He came out walking, and they were delighted. It was the talk of the town. I like to watch sometimes David Blaine, the street magician, right? You ever see people's reactions when he does a magic trick on the street? Some of them are so freaked out, they just take off running. Ah! It's so delightful because we did not see that coming. Well, with attraction and desire, my hope is I'm going to share three basic points. And, you know, I hope at the end you're so paradoxed, you walk out amazed, delighted, not confused, because I have a way of taking very simple topics and making them very complex and hard to understand, and I don't want to do that. I've been told that, right? I get too abstract. So I hope that you go, "Wait a minute, those are three very basic points. I didn't see that coming. But you know, it kind of makes sense. I kind of get it." That's my hope. So first point, here it is. First point, attraction and desire. On this journey, we must become more active, less passive. Oh, think about this just for a moment. Now, the sheets that you have, they're not an outline. I'm going to use those later in the talk, so you can write on them and do whatever. We have to become more active, less passive. Now, I want you to think about the concept of attraction and desire just for a moment. In normal life, and then I'll apply it to relationships. In normal life, when we're impacted, let's say by a beautiful sunset, we feel really warm inside. We're having a delightful experience. Or you go to a concert. Now notice, the event or the object has all the power, and we're very passive. We're on the receiving end of something, and we're experiencing a lot of delight, a lot of fun. Now, we're not doing anything. We're being impacted. I do like beautiful cars, automobiles. I do have some car stories that are very unfortunate, as my wife will tell you, on this journey, meaning I blew up 3 engines, making my car go very fast. That's another journey. So a Lamborghini, a Ferrari, a beautiful Corvette, I think those are objects of beauty and delight. If one drives up and we're at a red light, what do I tend to do?
Roll down the window.
I want to roll down the window and talk to these people. Awesome car, incredible, thumbs up. Sally's mortified and embarrassed and she goes, don't. But I'm so filled and impacted with delight, attraction, and desire, I want to worship. I want to tell somebody about it. Look at this, right? Now, think about it just for a moment. When we meet somebody that we are attracted to, think about it. Either by appearance or we have a conversation with them and we find them to be delightful, we might feel drawn and attracted to this person. Now, in this moment, when I feel desire, attraction, the object of my desire has all the power. I'm being impacted. Does that make sense? The object has the power because it's an object of beauty. Even if you stare at a painting that is gorgeous, the painting is doing something to me. I'm being impacted and I feel something, correct? You ever met another person, you find them desirable, attractive, you spy them across the room and you go, whoa, that person seems really delightful. We're being impacted. So when two people meet each other, even on the journey of relationship and getting married, both are being impacted by each other, correct? If it goes well? Now, if it's only one, you're probably not going to follow up with too many dates with that person, correct? So look what begins to happen just for a moment. In that moment of attraction and mutual feeling, we're creating feelings pinging off of each other. Do you remember when we first started dating and you were attracted to the person that you're with? Just being in each other's presence did something to you. Am I correct? Just thinking about tonight, I get to be with that person. Just thinking about it, you felt attraction and desire. Correct? I hope you did. Hello. Amen. This is where the wives nudge the husbands. You better say that you felt that. Well, you did. Now, pause. Let's ask the question, why, just for a moment. Can you do this with me, honey? My honey's going to do this with me. Now, we have a nice flower mirror. She gets that one. Okay? I have a regular guy mirror. There's no flowers on it. Now, when two people meet each other, here's what's going on. And this is the way God intended it. It's just what it is. I'm just going to describe it. We meet each other. I know. Thank you, honey. We meet each other, and what's really happening here is in Sally's presence, I'm enjoying a ping back response from Sally to me because he thinks he's awesome, incredible. We'll get more of that later. Gorgeous. I'll tell you that story. I'm getting a ping back mirror reflection of something that feels good to me. I'm getting a reflected sense of myself because she's smiling at me. She loves me. Oh my gosh, I think she's awesome. She's incredible. She's cute. She's spunky. We're going to get to that. She's spunky. Yes, we are. We are. And she's getting a ping back reflection from me to her. Does that make sense? Did I lose you? Is that too abstract? Now, as it happens, and it's been said at this stage, I'm not sure just yet whether I really love Sally, but I sure love how Sally makes me feel. Correct? I feel great in Sally's presence because I'm getting a ping back reflection of my own self back to me, and I love that. And she's getting a ping back reflection back to her. So right now, in the early stage, this is a very passive experience. Just in her presence, I'm getting a ping back reflection because she smiles and she loves me and she's nice to me and we have fun and vice versa, vice versa, vice versa. Right? Right? This is called a reflected sense of self. And I'm enjoying the reflection of my own self in Sally's presence because I think she's awesome and incredible, and I'm feeding off of it, but it is not clear yet whether I really love Sally, is it? Or whether I really love being in Sally's presence and how she makes me feel about me. Correct? Now, I'm okay with a little bit of both there, but at the initial stage, trust me, it's a very passive experience because Sally's impacting me, I'm impacting her, and we're trading reflected senses of self. Thanks, honey. Thank you. So on this journey of marriage, what happens over time is in this reflection, I get to enjoy this ping back of myself to myself. Sally enjoys the ping back of herself with herself, and over time, oh, marriage is a long journey. We're not going to be able to keep this up. She's dependent on me for a ping back. I'm dependent on her. Ooh, do you see where this is going? I'm passive, she's passive, I'm passive, she's passive. What eventually happens is we're glomming together in a real codependent relationship, if you want to use that term. I like to call it, we each have two straws sucking on the milkshake of our relationship. And sooner or later, that milkshake's going to go dry at the bottom. Because she can only give me so much positive pingback. I can only give her so much. And every year we're together, this is getting more complicated. Now, how much can I expect Sally to float my boat and cause me to feel attracted to her? Can she take full responsibility for that? No. Thank you. That would be a heavy burden, wouldn't it? After a while, if I told Sally, you're my everything. That's kind of nice on the front end. How about over time, what's it feel like? A heavy burden. She's my everything? Then she's got to carry my own feel-good feelings about myself all the time. Because where this is going to lead to is I'm going to be what's called mind mapping her. I'm going to be watching what she's thinking. What does that look mean? Does that mean you don't like me? And I'm going to follow her, and she's going to grow very weary, and she's going to me, and we're both going to grow very weary. So here's a big point. In my office, when I'm working with married couples, listen carefully. The couples who complain about the most being disconnected are overly connected. That make sense? They're so overly connected. One walks in, sits down. The other one walks in, makes eye contact. The first one says, what? My friends, that is not a disconnection. The glue is so thick between them, all it takes is a glance, and the other one is so overly connected and taking it personally that they're responding and reacting back. These couples who are overly glommed and connected will fight, squabble, pull, constantly, because they're glommed together. Had a sweet couple come in years ago. They'd just been to Colorado. Husband came in because he's a little bit just three steps ahead. And he's chatting it up. And I said, how'd it go? And he goes, oh, man, it was a great time, you know, sunshine every day, a little hiking, and kids had fun. And you know, he's talking. Wife wasn't saying a word. She sat down. Clearly. And I said, oh, yeah, get a little bit of mountain rain and stuff. And so eventually he could feel the vibe. She's not saying anything. So he looked over and he goes, what? She goes, I don't know what vacation you were on. He looked back at me and says, well, I guess it wasn't a good time after all. And what just happened? He said, I thought it was a good time. But then when he looked at her and she was disapproving, he gave it all up. It wasn't a good time at all. Because if mama ain't happy, nobody's happy. So they're glommed together. And right then, he lost a portion of himself. So over time, here's my point. Married couples can be so passive that nobody is taking responsibility in the relationship to nurture the relationship. They're just watching each other all the time as to who's going to take a step forward. And they're constantly waiting, or they're constantly doing a tug of war. I need somebody to step it up. It's passive, 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 passive. Who's supposed to take a lead here? Step up, be active, take some ownership, take a step forward, make some movement. Why? We all have to become more active, less passive, because I've got two straws. They're sucking on the relationship, and the milkshake's going to go dry. Over time, it will. I like to call that also two ticks on a dog and no dog. Two parasites sucking off a source. Poor dog died. I mean, he gave up his blood. I mean, what are we doing here, people? So, the challenge for marriage is, in case you didn't know, marriage is a people-growing machine. Have you figured that out? A people-growing machine. I really have a difficult time when people say, you know, one of the reasons why I got married is I want unconditional love. Wait. Now, theologically, I'm okay with saying God loves us. Unconditionally. We could talk about that later. But in marriage, marriage has conditions. You got to show effort. I don't get to lay on the sofa, eat whatever I want, do whatever I want, without condition, and Sally gets to love me and feel attracted to me. That ain't going to work. She wants to see me bump it up, take responsibility. So marriage, by its very nature, is a people-growing machine. Did you ever grow up with a pressure cooker? Do you have a pressure cooker or an Instapot? Yes. Is Instapot kind of a pressure cooker?
Yes.
It's a modern-day pressure cooker. But I grew up where mom would make a roast, and you put it in there. Now, why do you put a roast in the pressure cooker and not in the oven?
Faster.
Hmm? Faster. And it's going to tenderize it under pressure and break that tough meat down. That's marriage. That is marriage, folks. So my job as a therapist is all this pressure bearing down on people, stimulating them to grow, is pushing down, and most married couples push further apart because they don't know how to handle the pressure. My job as a therapist is to organize that pressure in a constructive way where it's pushing them upward into positive growth rather than pushing them further this way. Pushing them upward. Marriage, every year we're in it, is a people growing machine. And we got to stay up with the growth. It takes effort. We got to wake up. You can't be passive. I live in North Texas. You do too. I don't snow ski. Got to go to Denver for that. I've been. Do Do you know what happens if you're a green skier or maybe moderate blue? That's me. And somebody takes you and you go on the black slope. Is it fun? But that's exactly right. I had to take my skis off and slide down because I couldn't get back up and I couldn't get back down. So what happens in marriage is for every year we are married, the ski slope of our relationship is getting steeper, 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 and steeper. If I remain at the bunny slope in my skill set and the green slope, every year the mountain of marriage is getting steeper, and one day I'm going to try to ski it, and it's above my skill set, it's above my pay grade, and all my attraction and desire are going to shut down. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. And that's what happens skiing or when I exceed my ability in anything. I'm overwhelmed and I don't know what to do, so everything shuts down, desire kills, I don't like this, it is not fun. That's most people who come into my office in their marriage. They're way behind on their skill set, and now they're on double diamond black, and they haven't kept up with the degree of slope year by year. They don't know how to personally grow. If we personally grow, you can ski the slope and have fun. You can enjoy your relationship, but we got to know how to do that. Point number two. Point number two. The first one was more active, less passive. Second point. More ownership, less blame. Now, you see that sheet that you have two paths of influence? Yeah. Two paths of influence. So let me ask you a question. In your relationship, would you prefer that your spouse find you attractive, like you in their heart, stay with me, have desire for you in their heart, or would you prefer to be tolerated, endured, loved for Jesus' sake? I love you, honey, for Jesus' sake. Come on. Don't we prefer the first? Yes? Okay, thank you. Man, this crowd had me worried. No, Billy, we prefer to love people for Jesus' sake. Wait. We need more than that. Okay, so of course, the answer is we prefer to be desired. We prefer to be loved and desired. Now, in my office, perhaps in my own life, the most difficult people that I have to work with on the journey of growth are those people who have very little self-awareness of how they impact people that they love. Now, little self-awareness. I know we're all guilty of blind spots. I understand that. But I'm talking about very little time to ponder how they impact the people they love the most, their spouse, their children, family members. So think about it. If we're around an individual who has poor hygiene, doesn't take showers, doesn't brush their teeth for a long time, doesn't take care of themselves, we have to tolerate some very difficult characteristics about them. We have to tolerate and try to love them, correct? But we have some barriers getting in the way. They have very little self-awareness. So if they brush their teeth, take a shower, take care of themselves, they're easier to love, right? Easier to be around. We find these people delightful. Well, here's what happens over time on your sheet. Married couples tend to go down the left side, the left column. It's as if gravity is pulling people down the left side of the column. They use negative Would you give me one sheet, sweetie? I need, thank you. They use negative methods to influence each other. They build a case in their heart against their partner. Married couples will tend to use negatives from one to the other to influence and change and get positive behavior. Now wait, time out. Did you hear that? They use negatives about the person to the person to get them to be positive and make positive changes. Usually when you use negatives to a person, to them, even if you tell them how you feel about them, because you don't like them with your negative emotions, what's the usual response? Oh, you prosecute me, I'm going to prosecute you. You find fault with me? Hey, the other day, you didn't do this. Oh, now we have a tit for tat. That can go on in my office for 3 hours. It's a chess match. You moved this one, I counter moved you. I call expert witnesses to the courtroom. Are you done, prosecutor? The defense calls their witnesses. That's what happens. So we like to prove I'm right, you're wrong. I want to blame them, justify my own behavior. Of course, they do the same back to me. I have a heart leaning away from them. Well, they say, my heart is closed to you. And mad, frustrated, angry, and we create a victim story and prove we're more right, they're more wrong. Now, it's the law of negative reciprocity. You're negative, I'm negative. You poke me, I poke you. You find a fault with me, I'm going to find a fault with you. You justify your behavior, I'm going to justify my behavior back. So married couples will get into a law of negative reciprocity, all the while they're trying to influence each other to be more positive and bring more positives to the relationship. All of this kills attraction and desire. You don't really want to be affectionate with a person who's prosecuting you and bringing up negatives to you about you. It's very difficult. Oh, honey, it just causes me to really want to hug and kiss you and go out on a date. It doesn't, right? Now, I'm not saying there isn't a place that we can share that data, but how it's shared is the right side of the column, which I'll get to. It has to be, you have to be building relationship, and you have to do it in an inviting way where a person can receive the feedback, right? So let me tell you about Tom and Mary. Somebody that I worked with as an example of this principle. Watch out. So, illustration of Tom and Mary. Tom, with his sweet wife Mary, Tom had organized the majority of his thoughts, attitudes, and actions and behaviors around the goal of influencing and changing Mary. Doesn't that sound fun? When you organize all of your methodology and what you want to present with an underlying goal. You ever had a friend call you up and say, hey, let's go to lunch. I haven't talked to you in a while. And you think they just want to get together and go to lunch. And somewhere in lunch, they have an opportunity for a multi-level marketing thing that they want you involved in. You ever had that happen? Oh, now you know the whole nicey-niceyness. It had a goal underneath it. It was steering and directing. Does that make sense? How can you tell long-term married couples in a restaurant? How can you tell younger couples who are either dating, not married, or just married, and older couples, long-term married? How can you tell the difference? Ah, older couples are not talking or talking more? Not talking. Why are they not talking? And I don't want you to say, because they, know everything about each other. No. Somebody knows if I bring something up, there's going to be a reaction, and I'm not going there. And, or somebody says, well, did you talk to Tom today? Why? Well, I'm just curious. Why? Right? There's a goal somewhere. So we're all suspicious in our marriage. Where's this going? Why are you asking me this? Why? Well, I just want to know. Why? There's an underlying goal. So Tom had the underlying goal to change Mary. He said in our session, "Mary, you're always late. I could give you all the time in the world to get ready and still be late. I'm so tired of this. I'd give you hours in advance notice and you'd still be late." And to add icing on the cake, Tom said, "And you're also insensitive and rude." Tom, what exactly have you been doing all day? I come home, the house is a mess, stuff's everywhere, the place is chaotic, the kids are crazy and out of control. And then he has to add icing on the cake, justify his behavior. "I work hard all day to provide for you and this family, and you act like you don't even care." And then he would add a zinger. "Your response is disrespectful, and sometimes I wonder if this whole relationship is even worth it." Of course, when Mary would hear Tom say these things, what do you think she's going to do? Say, "Oh my gosh, Tom, thanks for sharing. I just love hearing how you feel." No. When Mary hears this, she's going to counterpunch. "Well, I'm not always late. It takes me longer, but sometimes you're late too. I'm not the only one. You were late the other day." Don't you love that? We're keeping score. "I'm doing the best I can with the house and the kids. It's overwhelming." And then she added the zinger, "Compared to what I face every day, your job is easy." Ooh, this is a fight in my office. All right, and talk about somebody who doesn't care. "You're the king of not caring. You don't talk, don't take any initiative to make birthdays special, yada, yada, yada." Punch, counterpunch, punch, counterpunch. So here's what I worked with Tom. Let's take more ownership, less blame. Let's take more ownership, less blame. So in my individual work with Tom, I said, "Tom, let's take a look at your imperfections in this relationship, where you're failing. Let's stop talking about Mary. I only want you to do one thing. Take an honest look at your own imperfections. It's not about shame. Just look at where and take ownership of where you could accept responsibility for some of the things and stop blaming Mary." Over time, Tom got it. And there came a time when Tom said to Mary from his heart with genuine sincerity, "Mary, I see that for a long time in our relationship, I've spent the majority of my energy trying to change you, influence you, correct you, and teach you. To do this, I've complained about you." He's gone down the left side. He admitted it. "Attacked you. Even when I'm irritated with you, understandably, you have responded negatively back to me. I don't blame you at all for doing that." Finally, Tom was getting it. "Mary, most of all of this is about me and my intolerance, my lack of patience, my lack of love. You're not the cause at all. All of this is inside of me. It's about me. It's my fault. It's my own failure, period. I want to learn to be more understanding, more loving, shift my focus, take responsibility for my life, my growth, and not be the expert on yours. I'm so sorry I've hurt and the harm I've caused you. I know this is about me, not about you." Now, when Tom said that genuinely from his heart, what do you think the atmosphere in the room was like? Did it change to the good? Tom said this genuinely from his own heart. He gave up goal-directing Mary. He gave up correcting her. He gave up griping, complaining. He gave up going down the left side. He said, "I need to see my own imperfections, and I need to be honest with you and tell you these are not about you at all. These are about me. And I'm so sorry I failed you. I want to learn to be a better person." In that instance, I guarantee you, Tom became an attractive guy. Mary, in her heart, liked him. He removed all of the static that he himself was putting into the relationship. He removed it, and in that instant, Mary's heart changed, and she liked him and felt attraction for him and to him and desired him in her heart. Because Tom made a shift. He stopped correcting Mary and took a look at his own life. He took ownership. He said, "I want to learn. I think this is about me." It freed everything up. And I'm telling you, when an individual, myself included, my wife included, our children included, simply say, "I'm sorry," I think that's about me. I think I overpersonalized your comment. It didn't have anything to do with how you said it and when you said it. I need to learn to be more tolerant and understanding and patient. I'm so sorry. I could have responded better. All the defenses melt away at that time. We become attractive. That's the paradox. The more we own, the more we take a look. It's not about being perfect. It's not about being lovely. It's not about being how handsome. It's about in the heart, this is a likable person. You want to go to lunch with that person. You want to go to dinner with that kind of person because you feel the openness of their heart. It's no longer fear. It's no longer a threat. They don't have an agenda. They're just humble people who say, I've learned a lot in life. How are you doing? And they take ownership. They're delightful people to be with. It's not about how much money you make. It's not about Botox. It's not about how attractive and the clothes we wear. It's the character in the heart. When we make this shift, more ownership, less blame. Third point, last point. More positive, less negative. Now, in marriage, there are two natural forces that we're fighting against. We got to hedge these. Number one, I think you're going to know this instantly. Did you know that negatives in life and positives are not equally weighted in value? Negatives? Positives. Which one has more power? You can have 10 compliments, 10 positive affirmations, 10 pump up your self-esteem affirmations, 2 criticisms. What are you going to focus on? Negatives, please remember, have 10 to 15 to 20 times more power than all the positives. Positives are good. But we must remember, positives and negatives do not have equal value. Do you know in a conversation where there are negatives and positives in the conversation, the negatives will have the most impact and tend to take over? Did you know it is easier to turn a really good conversation into an argument than it is to turn an argument into a good conversation? You ever tried that? It's easier. Did you know it's more difficult to turn an argument into a discussion than a discussion into an argument? You know, when I'm working with couples, I just want to understand why they're experiencing what they're experiencing without blame, without shame. I'm always interested if they say we're arguing all the time. I'm interested. Could you tell me what's an argument? I just want to know, what is an argument? Now, discussion is a discussion. I want to know when a discussion about anything turns into an argument. Because it seems like in an argument, somebody's got to be right. Right? Somebody's pulling somebody to their side, and the other person's going, no. And they're pulling, and they're counter-pulling. Oh, this is not a discussion anymore. This is somebody has got to convince the other one they're wrong, and they're mostly right. Very interesting. So, did you know it takes less energy for couples to fight and argue? It takes more energy to be nice. Did you know negatives are so powerful, they get an instant response, where positives have a long delay before you see the return? That's why couples constantly go to fighting the quickest, because it's guaranteed get the quickest, most negative, quickest reaction. I didn't say it's a good methodology. Do you know, in parenting, if you lose control, yell at your kid that you love dearly, or smack them, you know, you're instantly going to get their attention, correct? But long term, what's going to happen? Bad methodology. Well, this is what we have to learn. Positives take more time. That's why people don't be positive. They want quick, 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 right now. And did you know negatives, we are hardwired to pay attention to a negative because we biologically want to survive and thrive. And so we're always, our biological survival mechanism is looking out for the negative. Is this going to be a threat to my survival? We're hardwired, so we're tilted to pay attention to negatives and use negatives. Reason number two, first one is negatives have more power. Number two, oh, theologically, it's called depravity. I'm tilted towards a fear-based run and hide behind fig leaves and run away from God than I am tilted to run towards God. Make sense? Adam and Eve in the garden? I'm tilted towards self-protection. I am tilted towards seeing danger where there is no danger. I am tilted towards a negative. So here's my point. Be really careful about the internal filter you developed about your spouse. Because if it's filled with negatives, once it has a negative, the tail starts to wag the dog. Do you know what I mean by that? Once I have an a priori negative in my heart, I'm going to seek to prove it. Do you know if I don't like you in my heart, do you know I can find anything wrong about you and use it against you? Does that make sense? I can pick any imperfection. You were late to the lunch, 20 minutes. We said 12 o'clock, you showed up at 12:20. I could build a case in my heart and use that as data. But if I like you in my heart, what would I say? Hey, it's no big deal. Did you get caught in traffic? Not a big problem. At least you're here. Hey, what can I get you? Let's have some iced tea. We've got time. That's called positive attribution override. I'm overriding negatives because I like you in my heart. Do you remember when Jesus could heal people? And the naysayer who didn't like him in their heart said, you know what, only God or the devil has that kind of power. And this proves you're from the devil. Wait a minute. What if Jesus stood and said, actually, au contraire, I actually am God's son. What would be the response? Huh? Nuh-uh. Here's the modern day response in therapy. My friend, it proves you're a narcissist. Anybody who claims they're God's son, hello, narcissistic messiah complex over here. Right? Or this is my favorite. It was the word of the year last year. I could give a whole nother talk on this word, right? Up, gaslighting. You're just trying to manipulate my reality. No, I actually wasn't. I actually was telling you the truth. I am God's son, and I really do love you. Ha! I'm not falling for that manipulation. So if somebody doesn't love you in their heart, and they have a negative in their heart, I assure you, they can use anything about you and use it against you because they don't love you in their heart. So be careful, guard your heart, because once we start collecting negatives and go down the left side of the diagram, where are we going with it all? We're going to prosecute? I'd rather go down the right side of the diagram. The right side says, look, I want to build a relationship with you. I want to seek to accept and understand you. I don't want to build a case against you. You may act weird. I just want to understand it. That's what I do in therapy. I get all kinds of crazy behavior. I'm fascinated. So I tell all my clients, don't be frustrated. Be fascinated. This person you're married to, be fascinated and go, I have no idea why they're doing what they're doing. I know. It's a completely different culture. Even if you say it makes no sense at all, I assure you as a therapist, it makes complete sense. I assure you, and I'm going to find the complete sense. Because it makes complete sense. It might not make complete sense to your brain. You look at it and go, that makes no sense at all. I assure you, even your kids' behavior, come on. When you look at your kids and go, that makes no sense at all. Oh, come on. Yes, it does, if you really take a look at it. So down the right side, I want to listen to understand their behavior because I'm seeking to build a relationship. I'm not creating negatives in my heart to use against you. If I have feedback, I want to use ways that my feedback could be received by you non-defensively. So be careful of your method of delivering feedback. And I really don't want to hear, well, I'm just sharing my feelings. Please don't. If that's how you're going to do it. Let's not do that because it's not working, right? Have an open heart. Be open, curious, and fascinated. And I sometimes tell people, be more professional, less personal. So you have a sheet that says adjectives on your sheet. Do you see those list of adjectives? Now, not right now, but later, each of you make copies of this. I want you, as it says, on your own to circle 5 adjectives that you would use to describe your spouse. Because I want you to build a positive filter. And I want you to tell a story to your spouse about each of these adjectives that you circle. A story as to why you circled that. Make sense? Now don't just go, kind. Hello? Can you give me more than that? Oh, I don't know. Come on. Why'd you choose that? Okay, so, honey, spunky. Okay? My sweet spunky wife. Spunky Sally. Spunky Sally. Because we celebrate 40 years this September. And 40 years ago, I moved to Nashville, my hometown, after I graduated from seminary to plant a church. Sally was helping out, being the Learning Center director at the church. I hadn't met her. And so I show up, and on a Saturday in early September, I'm putting books into an office building because we were planting a church, we were renting a church, we didn't have church offices, so we, you know, hired some offices, so to speak, in a business building. So I was in Saturday afternoon in September, and Sally had happened to be meeting with the pastor, and she was working in the Learning Center and helping organize it. So she popped down to my office. She says, "You're Billy." I said, "Yeah, David told me all about you." No, we're just chitty-chatty. And so she looks at me, and she goes, "You want to go to a Vanderbilt football game today?" I said, "Yeah." "Yes, I do." Now, unfortunately, Vanderbilt was playing Alabama. But who cares? I'm going with Sally, right? So this is in the days of landlines. And Sally goes right over, picks up the phone, landline, dials. "Dawn," D-A-W-N, her friend. "Dawn, I just met Billy." "Mm-hmm. Okay, you will tailgate. All right, see you around 4 o'clock. Hang up." What had just happened is Sally set me up on a blind date with her friend Dawn. I thought I was going with Sally. I mean, didn't she say, "Do you want to go to a Vanderbilt football game today?" Yeah. She did. She just didn't tell me it was not with her. So I'm thinking, hey, at least we're going to tailgate. At least we can sit together in the, you know, seats and I can talk to Sally. So we tailgate, and Dawn's nice. Oh, fine. She's with Lee. Okay? So I'm thinking, at least we're going to sit together. We get to the gate, Vanderbilt Stadium. Sally hands me 2 tickets. I'm in the end zone with Dawn. She's on the 40-yard line with Lee, the whole game. And when she left my office, it had floor-to-ceiling windows and brick and window right here. I'm on the inside of my office. Here's a window. Outside is a walkway because you have to go out a center door. I'm on the second floor. You walk by my office to go down the stairs. You follow me? To this day, Sally doesn't know why she did this. But I'm standing in my office. She had gone out of my office, out the front door. She's walking on the landing, she has to go by my window, and when she went by like this. Knowing the stairs were further that way. She acted like she was walking down the stairs. And she just went, who does that? Spunky Sally. So we were engaged. We met in September. We were engaged May 18th the next year and married September 1st. Now that's spunky. So here's what I want you to think. I've said, on this journey of marriage, boy, it's a people growing machine. Don't get passive. You got to get active. You got to invest in your relationship. The ski slope's getting steeper and steeper. Be active, not passive. Number two, take ownership for your own life. Stop blaming your spouse. Stop focusing on them. Own your own perfections. Share that. You'll be a much more attractive person, and people will like you in their heart and desire you. And lastly, create some positives. Build the positives every day, your set of glasses, and look at your spouse through that positive lens and hang on. But why? Because life is crushing it out and trying to produce negatives. Hedge it. Push it back. God bless all of you. Thank you so much.